Chapter 17. Lily keeps two blankets in the Jeep, snag rags. One is a quilted moving pad, which I spread on the ground. I set the shiny garbage bag in the middle and use the moving pad to swaddle it. Squatting, I lift the meth garbage baby and gingerly place it in the back of the vehicle. I race home for the garage door opener Ron gave me yesterday. I'm back on the road when hail starts pelting the Jeep like shrapnel. I pull into a store parking lot along the business spur. Straight-line winds rock the vehicle from side to side. It's darker than I thought possible in an afternoon. Soup's afternoon practice must be ending, so I call Jamie, who answers with, "Hey." "Hey," I mimic as lightning flashes an instant before a boom of thunder shakes the Jeep. "Where are you?" he asks. It must sound as though I'm at a battlefront. "Kmart parking lot," I shout over the cacophony. "On my way to haul some trash." He's silent a moment. Did Jamie catch the significance of my trash reference? "Are you in your mom's car?" "No, Lily's Jeep." "I'll meet you there. Don't drive in this storm," Jamie says. "Wasn't gonna, partner," I say in fluent sarcasm. "Does he think I'm an idiot?" "Don't call me that." He ends the call before I can swear at him. 20 minutes later, the rain eases enough for me to watch Jamie turn into the lot and drive past the Jeep. I'm about to tap the horn when I realize he's parked close to the store, so anyone who recognizes his car will assume he's merely shopping. Okay, that's smart. I drive over to him, giggling as I imagine a spy-worthy intercept with Jamie making a slow-motion running leap. I reach for my phone to tell Lily, then slam the brakes. She isn't around to answer my calls or texts. Jamie sprints the rest of the way to the Jeep. He's drenched when he opens the door. "What the?" He begins in a raised voice before shifting tone. "What is it?" I open my mouth, but nothing comes out. He looks genuinely concerned. I focus on his tawny brown eyes. "Switch seats," Jamie says softly. "I'll drive." I climb over to the passenger side as Jamie takes my seat. We sit, surrounded by lightning, rumbling thunder, and heavy rain. Grandma Pearl loved a powerful Nichiwad like this. I blink until my head rests on Grandma's lap and she smooths my hair, as she did whenever I wasn't feeling well. It's how she comforted me after pouring my pee into my ear to cure the earache. I researched it years later, discovering what she had known. Urine is sterile and a substitute for hydrogen peroxide. What would my firekeeper Nokomis think about the surreal situation I'm now in? Could I even explain that I'm helping law enforcement officers from the same government that tried taking her to boarding school? If I told her about Lily and Uncle David and the sick kids on the res in Minnesota, would she know that I'm trying to protect our community and others too? Once the storm lessens, Jamie drives to the garage in Dafter. He places the meth garbage baby on the countertop along one side of the garage. I grab the other snag rag, a threadbare quilt, and stand at the open bay. The air is a good 30 degrees cooler than it was an hour ago. Jamie stands next to me and runs a hand through his wet hair. He's completely soaked. I sit down, positioning one half of the blanket under and around my right side. I motion for Jamie to sit next to me and wrap the left half around him. The soft blanket still has a wonderful smell of campfire smoke. We watch the last of the storm blow over. When I finally speak, my voice is scratchy. My Grandma Pearl loved storms. She'd sit in the garage like this and talk about the thunderbirds that brought our loved ones, our ancestors, from the other world to check on us. She'd say, "Tell them how you're doing, my girl." The thunderbirds blinked lightning, so every time it flashed, I'd wave and shout, "We're doing good!" The gigantic birds I pictured had rows of elders, like in an airplane, waving back. I wipe away my tears and meet Jamie's luminous eyes. "Do you think Lily was with them today?" I ask. He inches over until his shoulder touches mine. I focus on his damp t-shirt, warm skin, and calming breaths. Jamie doesn't need to be kind to me. I'm on board with the investigation now. We established that yesterday in the parking lot at the falls. We are partners and nothing more. But I relax my shoulders and don't move away. I stay next to him, just until the rain stops. Ron arrives as the sun reclaims the late afternoon sky. While searching through the workshop cabinets, he commends my quick thinking about the bag of trash. I wasn't sure if you were working with any tribal cops or if that information is confidential, I say. Ron is silent as he finds industrial gas masks and latex gloves in one of the workshop cabinets. It isn't until he hands each of us the protective gear that Ron responds. You should assume no one knows about the investigation, he says. No LEOs, not tribal, state, city, or even border patrol. Talk only to Jamie or me. Ron opens another cabinet and reaches for a packing tape dispenser with a thick roll of clear tape. My eyebrows raised quizzically prompt Ron's explanation. For lifting fingerprints. Jamie puts a small plastic tarp over a picnic table behind the garage, as if we are having a cookout. He sets the meth garbage baby on the tarp and pulls out one item at a time like Santa at a Christmas party. The table fills with dented containers of brake fluid, individual pop bottles with gray, opaque residue, lithium batteries cut in half so their guts could be scooped out, drain cleaner, thin white tubing bunched like spaghetti, and a dozen boxes of cold and flu tablets, the plastic sheets all having hatched their pills. How could anyone buy that much medicine without being noticed? I ask. Michigan restricts pseudoephedrine sales. Canada doesn't, Ron explains. I remember how Jamie laughed when I told him about buying stuff across the river. He had pretended to be surprised, but he'd been fishing for information. I don't buy cases of cold medicine. But I could. It isn't illegal. And you don't have the hassle of showing identification and filling out a form for the pharmacist. I thought you and Jamie could go to Marquette in a few weeks to spend time at the forensics lab. But now I'm thinking we shouldn't wait. Ron makes up a plan as he speaks. If I can arrange for the lab tech to work next weekend, can you think of an excuse to get away? Labor Day weekend might be the best time to be in the lab. What would Grandma Pearl do? I take a deep breath and hold it, remembering when the dogs barked and she had me hide. I watched her sit in a chair angled toward the door. Her hands were steady so her aim would be true. She was smart, resourceful, and incredibly brave. When I exhale, it's a long, controlled release. My new boyfriend and I can have a romantic weekend in Marquette.